Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. I'd like to welcome you, plus all the people listening over the internet, which is 99% of the people who listen. And even of those people, about 95% listen by downloading the show. And that's why we video stream it. You can also go to my Facebook and watch at least the health, nutrition, environmental segments of our program. Today, we're going to talk about vitamin C. Brand new research out of New York University Langone Center talks about vitamin C and killing cancer. And then if you're burned out, a lot of people are, there's one herb that can make a big difference. I'll tell you what that is. That's from Wien University Medical School in Austria. And then vitamin D deficiency. If you don't have enough of it, it can make a difference with heart disease. And resveratrol improves arterial stiffness and type 2 diabetes, the Tohoku University in Japan, and a lot more on health and healing. And what I do is each day, I try to select stories that you have not been aware of, that the mainstream media has not covered, but I feel are important because they're addressing most people's actual needs. Also, anything that is credible, that is backed by good science, that can show how we can live a longer life and a healthier life, I share that with you as well. All of our studies, plus far more, are posted every day after the show. So I might be able to only get to 15. But I might have 50. And cumulatively, we have thousands upon thousands. So it's a whole education on health and nutrition if you just read these. And then I select about 50 articles around the world each day on progressive themes. And I post them on my personal Facebook. That's only on the personal Facebook. That's not on PRN. So you can read those as well. So we have a lot to share today. I'm going to give a little updates into some areas about, someone asked me, well, Gary, aren't we really doing well in the economy? Yes and no. I'll explain the yes and I'll explain the no. Also, there's some really damning new information that has just come out about how much drug companies are using to bribe doctors. The numbers are staggering, and they're really bribing them. We should know that. Also, my talk-back question of the day, and I'll give that in a few minutes, is about climate change. I believe everyone wants to see a climate that doesn't become disruptive and destructive, and yet right now we're in the midst of, at least this week alone, over 20 major catastrophes around the world. Up to 1,000 people are now feared dead in Sierra Leone. Did you see anything about it? No. Everything's about the eclipse. That's fine. But what about the real issues that absolutely are affecting people? So we'll cover that. Dick Gregory passed over the weekend. Dick was a very close friend of mine for a long time. And we had many, many conversations together. He'd come down and visit me, my home at my ranch in Florida, and we'd sit. He also upstate when I had my farm up in the Healing Springs Ranch in Texas and the Fertiller Farm upstate. I'm going to play you one of his last interviews. And he evolved substantially, in my opinion, over the years. This is not Dick Gregory combining political insight with his unique type of biting satire that made you think. This is one that just galvanizes you to what he believes we're not paying attention to. This was just before Trump's election. His last interview, I watched it, and it wasn't, in my opinion, his best. I want to leave you with one that is really a thinking person's interview. I'll play that later. And then I'm going to play some music at the end of the show that's just for his spirit. And also today, I'm going to start a two-part series on addressing by a board-certified physician who spent over 15,000 hours researching the question of, are vaccines safe and effective? And you're going to hear from this doctor what she has to say. And everything she says, she has given me the documentation. So before I filmed her, you'll have a chance to see everything is documented. Now, you might not be aware of this. Some doctors, nurses, and pharmacists say, well, why aren't we aware of what she's aware of? Well, maybe you haven't done 15,000 hours of research. Maybe you are more susceptible to groupthink. Also today, we're going to play a segment about a unique car. And this car is just invented. The prototype is out, and the real cars will be produced very shortly. It runs on water. It's not an electric car. It requires zero pollution, including zero pollution in how it's energized. So you don't have to go to a weigh station and plug it in or put petrol in it of any type. Water. You'll see, if you're watching it, well, you would only be able to watch it, let's say, if you're downloading it later today. But it'll be posted later today. And you can see this. This is the, so everything these other people are doing, wow. It is going to make those so antiquated, so fast, that it'll impact hundreds of billions of dollars in their profits in the future. This is one of those paradigm shifts what Dr. Kahn talked about and Marilyn Ferguson wrote about in the Aquarian Conspiracy. If you've never read The Aquarian Conspiracy by Marilyn Ferguson, read it. If you've never read The Turning Point by George Leonard, read it. If you've never read Fritzhof Capra's important work, read these books. Even though they're 30, 40 years old, today everything they're saying is coming true. So this car, I believe, will cause a radical shift. I mean, radical, like overnight. So who wants gas? Who wants diesel? Who wants electric if you can have something running off water? So as long as you got water there, it'll just keep running. You could drive clear across America on just water. How about that? You're going to see this today. And then I don't think we'll have time today, but if not this week, the real-life house of cards, the insider deals, the murders, espionage, it's all documented. And the media won't touch it. And it involves the whole idea that the Russians hacked the DNC. No, they didn't. And this house of cards is about to implode. The truth about what happened coming at you. But again, I might not get to it today. So we're going to start with vitamin C. I was thinking about this. I was given a call by someone who knew Glenn Campbell, who just passed away about a week or so ago. And this was 2 years ago. And he said, could you help him? I said, I can only help people come to see me. But that means it's not just the person. Generally, when they're sick, they have family members, business associates that surround them and guide them in whatever choice of treatment they're getting. And if it's just the orthodox treatment, there's just no hope. You got to get them out of that and get them into another environment. But it never happened. And I heard way too late about Dick Gregory. I only heard hours before he passed that he was sick. And would I help him? I said, of course I would. But you got to have time. But when I do have time, and especially going back in time to the Tri-State Healing Center that thousands upon thousands of you came and improved or reversed your diseases completely, as you remember, the basis of most treatments was a long drip vitamin C. Long, generally 4 hours. Why? Because it was frequently up to 200,000 milligrams. Plus, it also had glutathione, aqueous vitamin A, depending upon what a person needed. And you could see magnificent changes. And when I had a group of physicians came one day, and they were saying, well, there's nothing in the scientific literature about this high dose of vitamin C. I said, you're absolutely correct. The highest dose was a Dr. Frederick Klenner down in Reidsville, North Carolina, and he was getting really good results, helping a variety of conditions, diabetes and cancers, with 50,000, and no one went near that. Most people, if you ask them for a high, high dose, medically supervised intravenous vitamin C, it was 5 to 10,000 milligrams. That rare exception might go to 15,000 milligrams. So if you've got cancer, if you've got colorectal cancer, you have breast cancer, prostate cancer, if you had AIDS, I want to tell you, 15,000 milligrams is going to do nothing. Disease will ultimately take you. And so the whole idea of coming to a high dose was I asked a Klenner when I was speaking with him, and then I confirmed it with the founder, discoverer of ascorbic acid, who won the Nobel Prize, Albert Sangiorgi, and then Dr. Linus Pauling. I was conversing with all of them, and I said, I believe that we are not even beginning to approach levels that are therapeutic at what they could be. I believe that medicine is ultra-conservative when it comes to treating disease, but society is ultra-liberal at creating disease. It should be just the reverse. Medicine should be extremely liberal in looking at what the body would normally have. And as an example, I remember there was Dr. Erwin Stone, who motivated Linus Pauling into vitamin C use. And the argument was, at that time I had a rescue farm upstate, the Fertiller Farm up in Stone Ridge. And people would drop off their animals, sometimes little notes, sometimes with nothing. The animal would be sick or injured or traumatized, and I'd try to get them back to health so they could be released back into the wild or taken to an animal sanctuary, never euthanized. And had goats. And people thought it would be really charming to have a goat for a pet. Big mistake. And so I end up, one time I had like 40 goats. And you have to understand goats' habits and behaviors. And, you know, a nice goat is suddenly ramming you, knocking you about 20 feet across the room. But I noticed something about the goats. There are certain diseases they just didn't get, like cancer. So the idea was, what's in their immune system that's allowing them to go long periods of time without cancer? Same with horses. Now, we did a simple study. Here was the study. Look at how much vitamin C is produced naturally in an animal to protect them from disease. Well, in a little goat, like a 20-pound goat, which is not a big one, it would be around 40,000 milligrams a day. Okay, now they're outside, they're eating everything. I mean, I've seen them eat poison ivy, poison oak, poison sumac and not get sick. So how is it they can eat almost anything and not get diseased? Their immune system. And what was the number one thing stimulating, you know, not getting cancer? Well, it's natural anti-cancer agents. That's what, you know, natural killer cells. So what causes that to be stimulated? It's not that you get more of it, it's just more powerful. Vitamin C. And the more vitamin C you get, the more of this natural anti-cancer agent in the blood you produce, the more powerful it is, I should say. So I gave this argument to Linus Pauling, and I gave it to some other people. If we humans, who are not down eating out of the soil, though growing up, dirt is actually healthy for building your immune system, and playing in the mud, these are all, and kids who grow up on farms who are exposed to a lot of microorganisms are far healthier than kids in cities. In any case, what will we be producing? So I did the math, and I came up with a figure that we should be consuming minimally about 20,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day. But we're not. And the way people take ascorbic acid, which is how most people get their vitamin C, the hydrochloric acid in the stomach would keep you from absorbing a whole lot. You would get acid response, meaning hydrochloric acid in your stomach and ascorbic acid, vitamin C, when those two meet, boom, gas, diarrhea. So then the idea was, how do you get the vitamin C in the body so you don't end up with what we call bowel tolerance? Because the wrong model, it was absolutely wrong at the time and everyone believed it, was the moment you hit bowel tolerance, you should back off. Yeah, from getting diarrhea, but that didn't mean that your body had enough vitamin C. So then I started doing hourly blood measurements on people who had different diseases and seeing how long it took them to pass the vitamin C from intravenous out of their bodies. And it's remarkable because in some cases it would take 4 to 6 hours before that level would come down, which means the body, the body was using it. You could have people who you would see just a difference. They'd come in fatigued with chronic fatigue syndrome or Lyme's disease. You give them a big vitamin drip, and they'd walk out just feeling totally energized. What was happening? The vitamin C was being used by the body's immune system against the pathogens. So therefore, the idea was we had to make a radical leap in faith because there was no science there. And that's when I decided we're going to do protocols going up, and they went up. Now, I used myself as the guinea pig. Before I ever recommended vitamin C, 6 days a week, I would sit there. Even when I'd be doing my radio show every day, the audience never saw this, but I'd be taking in 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C. Every week, every Saturday, my blood would be drawn, sent out to a blood lab, and I'd see every single thing going on in my immune system. This was extremely expensive for me because these tests were about $2,000 each. But I wanted to see what would it do to an ideally healthy person. And then I could make a model of what that would mean to a sick person. And sure enough, drug addicts, people whose blood is like a sewer that has every virus, hepatitis, everything you could imagine is in a drug addict's blood. And yet after a month on high-dose vitamin C and glutathione rebuilding the liver, their blood cleaned up. They were approaching normal blood. And so that's when it got into, it took 5 years for this to evolve. It wasn't overnight. Until finally one day you walk in and there's everybody getting high-dose vitamin C and remarkable results. That's how we were able to reverse full-blown HIV infection with pneumocystis and all these other conditions in 12 people with AIDS. 1,200 were treated, but only 12 decided they were willing to do 6 days a week, 4 hours a day. Most came in once a week or twice a week. And that got out to a Robert Cathcart in California. And he was the leading AIDS doctor in California using small-dose vitamin C, 5,000 milligrams. And he went up to 50,000. He came into New York, he visited the center, he saw what we were doing, had many conversations. And he started giving 50,000. He was able to reverse the number one and number two conditions in all people with AIDS, pneumocystis cranii pneumonia and Kaposi sarcoma. In almost all of his patients, he was packed with people getting vitamin C. But that was 50,000. He was afraid to go higher because he thought the authorities come in and jump all over him. In California, they would have. In any case, so I just want you to know that there's a lot of good background that no one's aware of outside of the people who benefited and the scientists who came and visited, like Linus Pauling and others. Lots of doctors came and used it private, quietly in their practice. And, of course, the patients who benefited, who are alive today, who would, otherwise wouldn't have. That's just an extended background to let you know that we are not using vitamin C in high enough doses. We're not using it intravenous. We should be. And today, I would be adding things even more. In fact, I'm going to be in the next year or two, as soon as I get caught up on all my current projects, I'm going to open up another healing center and under a nonprofit foundation. And because last time I paid for it out of my pocket, I can't afford it this time. And use even more advanced therapies, including light therapy with the vitamins at the same time they're getting it to impact the immune system on two levels, both with the light and with the vitamin C. So this is from New York University. Quote, vitamin C may tell faulty stem cells in the bone marrow to mature and die normally instead of multiplying to cause blood cancers. This is the finding of a study led by researchers from the Perlmutter Cancer Center at New York University Langone Health and published in the journal Cell. So, vitamin C encouraging blood cancer stem cells to die. That's big. But that's, they're just finding out the principles now. But imagine if they were also at the same time using high dose of vitamin C. Burned out? What should you do? Rhodiola. Rhodiola. R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A. Rosea. R-O-S-E-A. It, according to Wien University Medical School in Austria, it's one of the best things for you if you're fatigued. Quote, here's what it says. And this was published in Neuropsychiatric Disease and Treatment. Daily supplements containing rhodiola, rosea, extract may improve the symptoms of burnout that suggests this new trial on the botanical extract. Good. I would agree with that. I suggest rhodiola all the time, especially for diabetics, people with chronic fatigue syndrome, and people with Lyme's disease. And by the way, the best treatment in the world for Lyme's disease is intravenous vitamin C. Vitamin D deficiency linked to increased heart failure risk in older people. And this is from the ESC Heart Failure Journal. And it says the following. A recent study found an elevated risk of heart failure in more than half of older adults. And this risk was significantly associated with vitamin D deficiency. It was linked to a 12.2 times, that's a 1,200% increased risk of heart failure. And old age in them is when you're over 50. So here's the deal. Vitamin D is easy to get. Go out in the sun. Go for a walk. But you got to have at least about one-third of your body exposed. Now, you can, if you put a lot of lather on a lot of that sunscreen, which is frequently toxic, you're going to block the vitamin D from being absorbed. If you take a supplement each day of, let's say, 5,000 units of vitamin D a day, then that could do it also. You could help yourself. But that's going to help you keep from having heart failure over the age of 50. And from Toho University in Japan, this was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study published in the International Heart Journal. They found improvements in arterial stiffness and oxidative stress among type 2 diabetics who were supplemented with resveratrol. And it was 100 milligrams of resveratrol, which is good, and it was for 12 weeks. So let's take a look at this. How many times have you heard me say, take your resveratrol each day? If you're eating grapes or grape concentrate or grape powders, you're getting that. But if you're not, then you're not. So if you're taking the resveratrol every day at 100 milligrams or more, there are a lot of things that it does in the body. There are over 6,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature on resveratrol. But if you're a diabetic, and we have 100 million pre-diabetics and diabetics, about 30 million diabetics, 70 million pre-diabetics, you could help your heart. My previous guest in here had a cat. I'm allergic to cats. Except for Sally. Sally's this wonderful cat I have. She's 23 years old, and she feeds at night outside and then lays around all day getting love. Outdoor cats I'm not allergic to. This was good study from Vanderbilt University, and it says that sugars in human mother's milk are a new class of antibacterial agents. This is really cool. Now, we already know how good that breast milk is. And ideally, if you're capable of breastfeeding for 2 years, that's the best. You've just set your, if you're healthy and eating healthy and your supplements are right, and your food is good and your juices are good, then all that good that you're doing is being passed right along. And you're giving your child the best possible immune response as they grow up that you could. Here's what it says. Mother's milk, which consists of a complex and continually changing blend of proteins, fats, and sugars, helps protect babies against bacterial infections. In the past, scientists have concentrated their research for the source of this antibacterial properties on the proteins it contains. However, the interdisciplinary team of scientists, doctors at Vanderbilt University, have discovered that some of the carbohydrates in human milk not only possess antibacterial properties of their own, but also enhance the effectiveness and antibacterial proteins also present. Good. So you breastfeed, you've helped your kid, and that's important. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting in our studio in New York City. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come back and share a lot more. Please stay with us. We're going to be having that dance party shortly. I just got to find the venue. Right now, I'm going to give you several shorter segments, and then I'm going to give you the issue of our talk back. And then our number for talk back on this specific issue is the following, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And here it is. This is from Graham Peebles from Nation of Change. It says, climate change demands an end to excess and greed. I'll quote this. Man-made climate change and the interconnected environmental catastrophe more broadly constitute the most urgent crisis facing humanity. It has come about as a result of a certain way of life, a materialistic approach to living in which greed and excessive consumption has been championed. Voracious consumerism and values based on individual material success and competition and division lie at the very heart of the crisis. And if global warming and desertification and pollution and the destruction of our ecological systems are to be arrested, a fundamental change in attitudes and behavior is needed. Without this, little of substance can be achieved. Technological advances, while crucial in breaking the dependence on fossil fuels, are not on their own enough. It's a way of life, principally a developed world way of life, that needs to drastically change. As the Cloudburst Foundation states, balancing the carbon cycle requires much more than technological solutions. It requires a paradigm shift in how we approach economic growth and development, a shift away from excess, socioeconomic injustice, and environmental vandalism to sustainability, social, environmental responsibility, and sharing. Together with deforestation, burning of fossil fuels, coal, oil, gas, to meet humanity's insatiable appetite for energy, most of which feeds industry, is the major source of the greenhouse gases that are generating climate change. And while nations' productions of these terrible elements vary, global emissions overall are reducing, and despite some developing countries increasing their output, emission levels appear to have finally peaked. Okay. I would agree with those. Now let me put into a little larger context. Almost all the economic models that are now in play in the world, the Chinese in particular, and the United States plus Western Europe, Brazil's, for example, Australia's, they're all based in India's upon you got to keep growing. Every year you got to grow your gross domestic product, amount of goods and services that are purchased, sold into the marketplace. And if you have a 3%, 4%, that's terrific. But for about 15 years, China was up over 10%, as was for a period of time India and Brazil. Then disaster struck, 2007 and 8, the Great Recession, and those industries went bankrupt. People didn't have the money to buy. The great building booms, the great bubbles ceased. Now China is overtaking the United States either this year or next year will be the leading economic power in the world. Not military power, not political power, not social power, but economic power. And it's doing some interesting things, not today, but I will give you a reason why we should be following China's model only in one way. They are building a new Silk Road, but it's thousands of miles long. It goes from Western China, it goes clear through Africa and up through the Middle East into Europe. And they're building hundreds of ports, shipping ports and rails, high-speed rail trains. And they're putting trillions of dollars. They'll put almost $3 trillion when this is done into local communities all along the way. So they're creating jobs. They're creating factories to engage people locally in manufacturing and in also raising up the standard of living of those people. We're doing just the opposite. We're spending trillions of dollars with 900 military bases, weapons of destruction, $1.5 trillion on a worthless plane, another $1.5 trillion on nuclear upgrades that we don't need. We have thousands of nuclear missiles now. So we're spending the same amount of money, but we're doing it where it actually alienates people, creates crisis, and is not a deterrent. And yet they're doing it differently. So they will win this. And also they're building relationships with Iran, and they're building relationships throughout the world with other countries. They're now currently working with 72 countries in a good way, and giving those countries help and helping their unemployed get employment. And these are not slave labor jobs, as for a long time they engaged, and these are not environmental destructive jobs, as they did in their own building of their own country. Now they're reaping the back end of that with massive desertification, polluted water all over China, air that's so toxic. Over 1 million people die in one region of China each year from pollution, and just a completely corrupt political system. So it's one of these good bads. You know, you look at all that they've done bad, their human rights abuses, the invasion of Tibet, allowing no freedom of speech, no freedom of assembly. And then you look at what they are doing good. They're leading the world in renewable sources. By the way, the largest solar farm in the world is now being constructed in Australia. It will dwarf any in the Middle East or anywhere else. That's the new template. So all these countries are finally waking up saying, you know, we got to do something that costs us nothing outside the initial construction. And it's solar. Wind would be second. And a good example of that is in Scotland, which in some days it produces all their energy. In any case, we're doing absolutely everything wrong. Everything you could do wrong, we're doing wrong. I mean, if the editors of Mad Magazine tried to, and The Onion tried to do a parody of how stupid are we, everything we're doing is stupid. We're building bombs instead of greenhouses. We should be putting solar panels on every home in every state in America where they have sunlight enough to sustain it. We should be turning front yards into gardens. We should stop all genetic engineering and the pollution it causes, and we should get back to sustainable, diverse farming to help. We should go vegan instead of meat. Yet what happens is this. When your economy is based upon a five-tiered system, the very rich, the oligarchs, the billionaires, the Bill Gates, these become de facto emperors. They are treated as such. Whatever they say goes. They're the ones that hold these seminars around the world for exclusive rich people. It doesn't matter how smart you are. It's how rich you are and how powerful you are. And then they come, and then they decide what they want to see the world become. And that's, they use the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergs, and at least 2,000 think tanks, the Free Enterprise Institutes. All of these are staffed with the best and brightest, very intelligent individuals, the technocrats, the futurists, the people who are willing to take an idea, no matter how long it takes, and work it into every institution of government so that no matter what we the people need, it's what they demand that they get. Hence, you've got this great great divide. We have the money. We always put it in the wrong places. We don't put a penny into deghettoizing a city, or helping improve our educational system, or free education, or free health care, or preventing disease. We put our money into creating disease by sponsoring those corporations, giving them subsidies that actually cause death and illness. So that's why I say we're doing everything ass backwards at that level, the policymaking level. And then we get all these, you know, pretty men and women to go out there and tell us why we should believe them, or the born-again evangelicals, the Rush Limbaughs, the Bill O'Reillys, they're all hypocrites, to tell us why their belief is the only belief and we should not think. We should just shut up and listen to them and buy their products. And there are millions of people buying into this, the left and the right. So we've got to change the model. The economic capitalist model doesn't work. It fails. Laissez-faire fails. Trickle-down fails. Giving tax breaks to the rich. Let me just give you one example of that. We're told that we got to give a tax break to corporations so they can then spend more money. A, that doesn't work. They don't pay taxes to begin with. If you're wealthy, you don't pay your fair share of taxes. Corporations don't pay any taxes. In fact, some corporations like General Electric, while it made $5 billion in profit, it actually got billions of dollars in government subsidies. We taxpayers paid it. And the depreciation allowance and all these other tens of billions of dollars a year we give to big coal, big gas, big oil. We also give it to big agriculture. We give it to every industry. We give massive subsidies. We, the people, pay for the scientific discovery of a vaccine, then we give it free to a manufacturer who then charges us for it. I mean, this is really a bad model. We never help small businesses, the backbone of America, and yet you walk down the streets of Manhattan and every block you see closed up stores. Now, my brother has been his entire life an advocate for the small business person, and he told me just recently that over 200,000 small businesses have closed in the last 30 years in New York City. And I see it. I counted 64 just walking down Broadway yesterday. But no one cares because they want the box store, they want the drug store, and they want the bank. Well, that's all you're getting now, the mall stores. What about the little mom and pop? People think, well, that's an inconvenience. We're buying over the internet. So now the big stores, the big malls are closing, the brick and mortar stores are closing. But still, there are people making money, and here's how it works. The oligarchs control everything because they control the banks. And when you control the banks and you control the Federal Reserve, you have undue influence, you then decide who gets debt. And if you have zero interest and you can take all the money you want to buy your competition and to have massive advertising campaigns, then all the other people who once were in that same line of business, they can't be there anymore. So you buy your competition, you close down their factories, and you ship the brand over to China or India, where the same product, a bicycle that was once made in the United States, and maybe it cost $60 to make it, so you sold it for $100 so the store can make some profit. Well, now that same bicycle is made in another country for about $8. It is then shipped in to a box store and sold for $40. So how can you make a bike in the United States that costs you more to make than what another company is able to make it and sell it? Same way with fabric. Say, you know, dresses and shirts and ties and suits that used to be made in America. Not today. Very, very little as compared to the 800 million garments that were made in just one country, Bangladesh, last year. But they're paying 14 cents an hour for the women to have the shortest working lifespan in the world, 32 years of age, so they can be beaten by men walking up. What a misogynist country they are. That in India. Whoa, boy, do they need a wake up into the realities of dealing with people as human beings. But that's another topic. In any case, I'll just give you an example. There are men with stopwatches that will walk up and down an aisle with a switch in their hand, and they'll time how long it takes a woman to put a button on or a pocket or a zipper. It's not whack. You get two breaks a day, that's it. If you have to go to the bathroom, too bad. The water is polluted, and we see how many times they end up dying in fires. And then at night, they walk home because they can't afford to pay for public transportation. They go home midnight. They put in the longest work days, and then they have to make their meals, do the laundry. They're lucky to get 3 hours of sleep. They get back up and walk to work, and that whole torturous process starts all over again so that we can go in a store and buy something made from slave labor without ever thinking, because we're getting it cheap. We're getting a deal. Now, everyone involved knows this. No one is illiterate on this. So what does that say about people who buy things without any thought or concern about how was this made? As long as you're making a profit, that's all that matters. I had suggested a long time ago, stop the entire insanity of the taxes. We haven't have one flat tax that every corporation, every business has to pay with no deductions. You eliminate the IRS. And that way you are going to get another $1 to $2 trillion, and you put a 1% tax on every trade, algorithm trade, every trade on Wall Street. That brings you in another $500 billion. Now you're actually making money on, instead of having it, and you make it against the law to outsource your work and keep your profits outside the United States. You bring the money back in the United States. You have them pay a 20% fee on all their outstanding money. That's $31 trillion. Imagine 20% of $31 trillion that the American payer has. Then abolish the Federal Reserve, a corrupt, criminal, totally rotten to the core institution, and you turn that over to the Treasury that can then print money for zero interest. Just something to think about. In any case, it's all based upon this stupid system. Then you have the people that actually are the fronts for all these businesses. They take their profit, give it into foundations and think tanks that then influence legislators and the lobbyists. And then they control the legislation that controls the factories, that controls the industry, so the Koch brothers and the Soros and the others don't have to pay their fair share of taxes, and they don't have to clean up their industries. They can speculate in currencies. They make money off money. We should have no Wall Street. Wall Street should be a museum to the most corrupt 2 miles, square miles on Earth. That's what it should be, just empty buildings with audio tapes outside so you can hear about who worked here, how much money they made, and how many people suffered because of it. If we had that education, we'd have a different system. And the people who are not benefiting from all this great boom in business are the working class, the poor class, and right now even the professional class. And when you hear the next jerk on television, and in my opinion they're all jerks, get up there and say something about business, ask them this. What was the largest single expenditure in the last 12 months on from all the major corporations that allowed the stock market to go up to all these ridiculous high 22,000 when it really should be around 6,000? It's called buybacks. U.S. firms spent $4 trillion on purchasing their own stock. Now, why would a company buy their own stock? Well, the more shares of stock you have out there, the less the value the stock is, and therefore the less the value of the earnings on the stock is. And people who run corporations, they know that if they're buying back the stock, it's then increasing the value of the existing stock. They buy that stock back and then they retire it. They take it out of circulation. So they have a simple mathematical system, and that is that the earnings will improve, and that means that the formula used is that you have a smaller denominator, which means this, that when you have less shares of stock and you have the same amount of profit, the value of each stock goes up in its return on investment so that the major players and the corporations get these massive bonuses. So what could they have done with that $4 trillion and another $2 trillion they're sitting on? They could have raise the wages of the existing workers up to a living wage, which would then allow those individuals to go into the marketplace and buy things with savings instead of debt. Because right now, people are working at one job, they make too little to be able to have a living wage, and then when they buy something, they have to use a credit card. And by buying something on the credit card, that is buying through debt. And then you have a whole industry that is buying debt. There are many companies right now that are buying for 2 cents, 5 cents on the dollar, buying your debt. So let's say that you didn't pay for a credit card or you didn't pay for something, and now that goes into an uncollectible pool. Well, someone owns that. They went in and bought it. They bought it from the bank. Now, these are the persons that will contact you. They will go in and garnish your paychecks, including your Social Security. Anything you got in the bank, you can open up your bank one day and see you have nothing left. They legally have a right to go in there and take all the money out of your bank account. They have a right to take your savings, your pension, even a part of your Social Security. And these people are making billions of dollars a year because we owe trillions of dollars. And so they're just buying your debt. So instead of forgiving debt, instead of closing down debtors' prisons, which should have been closed in 1822, we now have booming business and taking someone who doesn't have any money in the bank, but they owe $44. True story. They owe $44 on a parking ticket they got. So then they arrest the person. The person can't pay the $44. If they had the money, they'd have paid it. So they put him into a private debtors' prison. It's a private cop that arrests him. It's a private bailiff, it's a private judge, it's a private probation officer, and they're going to charge $135 a day to be in their private little jail. So now you got to go to your family, because you could be in there, and the more you're in there, the more you incur more debt. And all the politicians, these sleazebag low-life degenerates you vote for, I would never vote for any of these disgusting scum. And I'm only saying something kind now. But these retards know exactly about debtors' prisons. But it's not them. It's not these shills that are getting put into prison. It's the average American. They're stealing your assets, asset forfeiture, $4 billion a year. That's a great business to be in. Then if you're poor and can't pay a bill, then there's the debtors' prisons. Then there's debt companies that buy your debt. And then they give you greater credit cards with greater amounts that you can use. This is just brand new and just released. This is just right now. This just came in today from Liberty Street Economics, just released. More credit cards, higher limits, and uptick in delinquencies. Where do they make their money? Delinquencies. Remember, credit card companies don't want you paying your bill when it's due at the end of the month, because then you're paying no interest. They want you to be late and have to make partial payments. Then they jump up to 20%, to 40%, to 70%, to 100%, and then it goes across all debt. Are you aware that when you have one credit card that you don't pay, all of your other credit cards, they can then jump up and charge you the higher, even though you haven't been delinquent on any of those other credit cards? It's a game. It's a perverse game. And people are not aware of this. So all the politicians are fully aware of it, but they're getting money from these people. Clinton got loads of money from the private prison systems and these credit card companies. So that's how the game is played. So they have the money to spread that to the employees, to participate in hiring more people, to bring those jobs back to America, to create free tariff zones in the United States where you're able to compete with someone in another country by the United States saying, if you create manufacturing jobs to bring that bike back to America, that car back to America, we will help you. We will help you so there's parity. Now, if you do that, then a shirt in the United States, you could buy at the same price as a shirt made at 14 cents an hour, but that woman's making $24 an hour. Wouldn't we rather see women making $24 an hour or more in the United States than a woman being brutalized and punished, her life shortened and beaten, living in a crappy little country like Bangladesh that is nothing but corrupt and misogynist in the extreme and killing their own women? What kind of country does that? A sick country. Saudi Arabia. Half the countries of the world are sick, run by despotic groups. United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Egypt. Corrupt to the core. We're not willing to acknowledge this. No one in the media is going to tell you this because we do business with it. We sell arms to them. We have military bases there. We profit from it. So we play the game that somehow these are good countries. They're not good countries. You're only good when you're good for the world, you're good to animals, you're good to the environment, you're good to people. Then you can say you deserve the right to be called good. Otherwise, you're not. In any case, so we've got to change the system. And we can't change the system that we have because no one in the system is going to change it. They're profiting from it. And all the foundations, corporations, and lobbyists control it. So if you can't change the existing system, then what do you do? And if you can't get people to stop eating the meat and this and all the high-end foods that then pollute our environment, that kill animals, that cause disease, how do you approach them? So we know that environmentally we're running into a nightmare, one that will impact everyone on the planet, is right now. You didn't hear a word about the nearly 1,000 people who died in just the last week in Sierra Leone. But you would have heard if 9 people, not 900, but if 9 white rich people died in a mudslide in Connecticut, oh, you would have heard it. And that had been all over the news. That had psychologists and analysts. That had grief counselors. Everybody would. But 1,000 black people? No, they're not worth diddly squat. So why should we make news about that? Such racism in the New York Times and these other places. They're disgusting. Anyhow, that's my own personal feelings. So anyhow, what do you suggest? How do you suggest we get this message out that we're not going to do anything about global warming? Nothing in the United States. Not a thing. Not now. We didn't under Obama. We didn't under Clinton. We didn't under Gore. Gore only is interested if he can make money out of it in his hedge fund, the $7 billion hedge fund, and the solar panel he's got all those stocks in. Now, all the while, wise. You know, using 20 times more electricity than anyone else and flying on private planes. Nice game. So what is your answer? What do you believe we should do to a completely corrupt system, a completely corrupt faux democracy, a completely corrupt media? Many of the environmental organizations are fraudulent. They get money from the very industries that are causing pollution, and they will never report on that. So how do you get the average person to understand, unless they change how they consume, what they consume, how much they consume, that nothing is going to be better, it's only going to get worse? What is your message? That's TalkBack. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And while we're waiting for you to think about how you would address this, I have my own ideas, but I want to hear from you. I'm going to play you my tribute to my friend. And I was thinking this morning about all the conversations that we had and him wanting to get into the health movement, and I helped do that, and all the meetings and people I introduced him to, and all the people that he asked would I help to heal them who were really sick. And we had a wonderful, quiet relationship, a great friendship. He's passed. Here's one of his last in the last year. He changed the way he was approaching it in his final year of life. Listen up.
All right, folks, we continue our post-election analysis talking to with our Wisdom of the Elders segment. And so we had Reverend Jackson on Monday, Clarence Jones, MLK's attorney on Tuesday, joining us today, civil rights activist, comedian, Dick Gregory. How you doing, my brother?
I'm fantastic. Having fun.
Absolutely.
Feel good.
This path forward. Yes. Folks are apoplectic, upset, mad, angry.
Anytime you vote for the lesser of the two evils, you evil yourself. That's how Hitler came to power. Okay? We don't see that. But you got to be evil. Here's a guy who rapes a woman once a month, another guy rapes a woman once a day, and you got to pick one to babysit for you. You're evil. And that's what America, that's how Hitler came to power. See, few people know Hitler won that election by 288 votes. Okay? And almost wiped the world out. So you can get by with that with the church. But you can't get by with that with the universe that made the moon, the sun, and the stars. And that's where we are.
You got people who are concerned in terms of where do we go from here?
You don't go nowhere. It's not your business. Not your business. If you ever saw Trump's television shows, brilliant. So how do you get so stupid all at once? If I went to apply for a job collecting garbage, they would ask me to bring in my last year's tax return. You run for president, you don't have to bring his in, and y'all tolerate it and don't know where it's going? That's what it's about. That's what it's about.
What do you say to that activist, to that young person, to that elder who's saying, okay, what do I do for the next 4 years?
You can do nothing. You're not going to make 4 years. This country won't make 4 years. It's over.
Now, when you say it's over, what does that mean?
It means decline. The Romans, the Greeks, the Egyptians, all of them fell. Okay? All of them fell. You see it.
So what should we do? Because Jim over here talks about the resistance.
Please.
They had a resistance with even going against Hitler.
Please. The Jews didn't know what Hitler was doing. Okay? Our problem is we think we're part of this government, and you're not.
Yes, sir.
We want to take the Democrats and Republicans, but when Condoleezza Rice came in, she had more PhDs than the whole administration had, and they called her Condi. They never called Madam Maddie. See, there's a soda pop darker than her called Dr. Pepper. If you go get one, you better call it by its title, or they give you a chili pepper. That's what it's about.
You look at the people who he's already putting on his transition team, and it's amazing to me watching mainstream media lose their mind. Oh my goodness, oh my goodness. And I'm sitting there going, he made it clear what he said during the campaign, what he was going to do. Why y'all acting shocked now?
Yeah, but my mother was the same way. She went to the doctor and she said, if you find cancer, don't tell me. That's what white Americans do. If you find it, don't tell me. They didn't just get like that all at once. You got high school students marching, huh? The question needs to be asked, how y'all leave school with no permit, huh? Because if you had a child on one of those marches and they got killed by a car, the school got to pay you. That's not the easy thing to do. But they did. Huh? Marched by the White House, marched by, and nobody saying anything. Principal told them to go out and demonstrate in the playground. Everything you see, something's wrong with it. Okay, something's wrong with it.
Do you think that we're going to continue?
Tomorrow night on the Progressive Commentary Hour, an entire hour or longer set aside for a whole history. I'm going to go through our archives and pull the interviews I did with him. Plus, we're going to get some of Dick Gregory's best comments from early in his career right up to the present day. So a whole commemoration of his great life and great work on tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Progressive Commentary Hour. Let's say I only got time for two quick calls. Jeremiah, your turn from Harlem.
Okay, I'll try to be really quick, Gary. I'm going to allude to something that I alluded to the last time I was able to speak with you, which is just that I think we need to support the people that we know who are doing good things, because I see people just getting caught up in this frenzy of celebrity, good or bad, and then they're treating people that they know who are doing really positive constructive things almost like non-entities. So as I was walking home just now, it occurred to me that there should be a major project, and maybe you could even initiate this somehow, Gary, of engaging one by one all of the community gardens in New York City. There should be a different event every weekend, if possible, at a different community garden, getting different people to come there, participate, donate, maybe do some gardening. And it seems to me that would be a great place to teach people about nature, teach people about nutrition, and to get hands-on in the community, because I see all these little community gardens in different sections of the city, and there's usually no one there, or maybe one person kind of sitting there tending to some things. But that seems to me something that's underutilized.
That's a good idea, Jeremiah. I also have another idea. I was thinking about this yesterday when I was doing our run in the park. I'd like to take one very poor community. The poorest I can think of right now would be in Camden. It's the poorest city in the United States.
Yeah,
and have the city donate a block. We would go in and level the block and then build the most beautiful and self-sustaining garden that would feed at least 5,000 people. We would also put a holistic health clinic there. It would be free, meaning doctors, dentists, nurses, whatever a person needed, there'd be therapists there to help them, and that would serve the entire community. And therefore, thousands of people, even getting off drugs and or helping them from the damage done to whatever their damage is in life, in their body. And so then also having classes in the same place for people who are needing to be reeducated in crafts and skills that are applicable today, so they don't feel, because they don't have a formal education, that they have to be left out. So one block is all it would take, and I'm willing to pay for that. I'm willing to be there. I'm willing to help, and I know I could get other people like yourself and others in this audience to do it. So once you do it in one city, once you have one model that shows after a year how many positive lives you've impacted, how they've changed their lives, their health, and then help their whole community, where the community comes together once they see what you're doing and what you're doing is for them, I then believe that that could be used in every city in the United States.
I think that's a great idea, Gary.
All right. So if anyone in this audience knows anyone in Camden, and it has to be like the mayor or someone in the town committee, I'd be willing to go down there. I've gone to Camden many times. I took truckloads of food down to the Sacred Heart Church of Reverend Dowd, who's one of the Camden Seven, to help the parishioners. But that's just piecemeal. We need something that's stable. Where you don't have the corruption, where you can say, all right, now we the people are going, and all the professionals who would donate their time would come together, work together, and show you can change anything if you have the will and the insight. So reach out, and they can always get that person to call our office at 646-926-5422. Now, thank you. We got a lot of the calls, but I want to end with just a couple minutes, maybe 3 minutes, of a special you know, my way of saying goodbye, my friend, Dick Gregory.
Let me hear the worshipers! Where's all of my praises? I want everybody around the world to put your hands together because all the praise belongs to God. Here we go. It's who I got. Take it up, every praise. It's to our God. Every word of worship. With one accord.